Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wendy's Coffee House. Hello, I'm Wendy. Okay, we're diving in today. Proof of spiritual phenomena, a neuroscientist's discovery of the ineffable mysteries of the universe. Mona Sabani, PhD, neuroscientist, researcher, author, radically curious. Let's start with this one.
Yeah, when she talks about the fairies, I was like, oh, you're crazy. But because that's what society tells us we're supposed to think of someone who says they've seen fairies. But then I was looking at her and I was like, I don't know, I've known this woman a while. She's okay.
Mona Sabani, PhD, neuroscientist, researcher, and author. It was all science, no spirituality. All that stuff was bunk. And then you changed. Coming from that background, materialist, what happened?
Yeah, it was a series of events that happened. But yeah, I was very anti-spiritual, anti-religion, very, very strictly materialist scientist. And I just had a series of events happen. And the first thing in my life is I'm Persian. My parents come from Iran. And in our culture, we have a tradition of reading coffee grounds. So we use like a thicker kind of coffee. It's called Armenian coffee. Like you drink it, you leave grounds at the bottom, flip the cup, it dries, and there's pictures, and then a reader will, you know, intuit or divine what's going on in your life. And so my grandmother was skilled in this. My mother was skilled in it. And of course, as a scientist, I just ignored it, never paid attention to it. But my mom started doing, you know, readings for me casually while I was in graduate school. And I just realized she was way more accurate than she was not accurate. She was more right than she was wrong. And she, in 2016, she saw this, like one of these pivotal moments in my life where for 5 weeks in advance of the event happening every week, she would see it in my coffee and kind of just like warn me, kind of like, okay, you're going to get some really bad news. And she would never said anything like that before, but this one was unusual. And it turned out that one of my professors, at the University of Southern California, which is where I got my PhD, he was killed by one of the students in our program. And so I had worked with him on my dissertation, and so the whole thing was upsetting, but the fact that she had, you know, foreseen this 5 weeks in advance really shook me and kind of really turned my worldview upside down. And I just couldn't understand how it could be possible that she could know this so far in advance.
She wouldn't tell you what it was. She said, I didn't want it to come true. And so she didn't say it out loud. She just said something very bad is going to happen. Okay, well, that's kind of a, that gets your attention. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. I was on edge for weeks. And then afterwards, she told me what she saw, which it was a death. But she didn't want to say it because she also said she had trouble interpreting it because she had never seen anything like it before. So she knew for sure it was a death, but she couldn't, you know, she didn't have the context of the event to understand the symbolism. Because she, luckily, never seen anything like it before.
Yeah. Well, and in the book, you describe how to do these kinds of readings or how she does it, which I think is really helpful because we all have our own ways of reading symbols or devising a pattern. And she has a pattern where she can tell if it's inside the house or with relatives or other people. And sometimes it's very specific. And, you know, looking at the coffee grounds, it's like, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was really, and that's what was hard for me as a scientist to understand, because we don't really understand symbols, right? Because everything's very reductionist, down to the atoms and particles. So that was what never made sense for me, that I could never reconcile until later. But actually, I don't know if I've reconciled it yet, but I still am. Well, it's an ongoing process.
You journaled, you documented it for 10 years. And then I think what was this happened in maybe year 10, after 9 years of doing this, you knew that she was pretty darn accurate. That's why it gave you, a second thought of, oh my gosh, she's not joking. I know her track record, and this isn't something to take lightly.
Yeah, exactly. And although I didn't understand the mechanism or how it worked, I knew that I knew that it worked. So, that was, but you know, they only teach you one framework in school, or, you know, society has one mainstream narrative. And since this didn't fit for me, that narrative, I just couldn't understand it. I had a very hard time understanding it.
Okay.
And it wasn't until I went down this research path to find other philosophies and other worldviews where I ended up having, you know, a framework to plug it into.
Well, let me start with from ground zero. Basically, the paranormal, psychic, PSI, all that woo-woo stuff, this is materialist science all the way, and that stuff was a bunch of hooey. But I do like the fact that, I guess, in your culture that you're either going to be a lawyer or a doctor, and that's the way the world works. Okay, so the disappointment was you decided not to go into medicine, doctor. However, being the neuroscience element, and then straight for the psychopaths. What?
Yeah. I was really interested in psychopathic behavior, and you know, in my mind, it was what goes wrong in somebody's brain and the way that they process information that makes them capable of, you know, behaving kind of these horrible, heinous ways. So I was interested in that. And in general, just human behavior, like how we interact with each other, why we behave the way that we do. So I focus on that in my graduate studies, yeah, initially.
Well, and part of that, though, I think is where you drew the void was how does consciousness fit into this equation? Because there's no hard science for consciousness.
Yeah, not at all. And it's actually, when I was in graduate school, I wasn't that interested in consciousness, like, as a topic, even though most neuroscientists are. But I wasn't, just because I knew that it was difficult for us to study it, or we didn't have any good ways of understanding it. So in my mind, I was kind of like, oh, okay, well, whatever. That's kind of, we can't even tackle that, so why bother thinking about it? So I focused, you know, mostly on the more technical aspects, or like emotions or personality traits that we could measure and study. But yeah, this whole transformation and this kind of, you know, rerouting of my life that happened because of these events did force me to think about consciousness. Because as I mentioned, as I went to read other worldviews and other philosophies and other, you know, descriptions of physics and stuff, consciousness kept coming up in everything I read. And I just thought, oh man, okay, I guess I'm going to have to look at consciousness now and think about it.
For someone who isn't familiar with all the background and the studies that have been done regarding PSI in psychics and mediums and those abilities, which has been done for hundreds of years. I mean, they were looking at this stuff back in 1700, trying to figure it out. The spiritualists, there's been interest in this, but our science doesn't really recognize any of that. Even some of the latest, most recent stuff saying that psychic abilities are valid. The people at the CIA have worked on that. And then the other, I think Daryl Bam is the name, who came out with a study saying this is valid and this is legit, and yet it still gets dissed and rejected and ridiculed. How did that work with you as you began doing the background research for this?
Yeah, well, that's what that was the big question for me. That was the question that kind of led me down this path, because I thought, well, I've had these personal experiences, you know, they're hard to discount. Like, I'm trained in statistics, so I know, you know, to me, the odds of somebody guessing, you know, like 9 variables correctly on an event in your life, you know, just randomly, that's pretty statistically unlikely. So I went to read the papers. I think the reason is, which is, there's just been this acceptance of this physicalist, what we call scientific materialism, kind of physicalist description of the universe, which is just one worldview, but believing that everything is made of matter, that time, there's a few assumptions that go into it, but that everything is made of matter, that time moves forward. And so in that kind of paradigm, it doesn't make sense, right? There is no mechanism, there's no way to explain psychic phenomena. And so most scientists, first of all, are not familiar with any of the research that's been done. Most of them will well, if you ask them, they'll be like, oh, it hasn't been studied or it's been debunked. And it's not that anyone's ever looked into it. As I point out in the book, if you had asked me, I would have said that, but I would have never bothered to actually look. It was just kind of like, you thought it was common knowledge. You thought it was something that was like established well in society. But when I went to look into it, I found that that wasn't true at all, that there were all these studies, that they were, their methods were very similar to the studies we do. Sometimes they were better. They were very well controlled. The statistics they used were as good or better than what we use. And so I came up against, okay, well, we don't have an explanation for it with our, you know, scientific paradigm. But if you're using the same methods and the same statistics and you're finding, you know, significant results, like this is just, you know, these would be studies very similar to studies that are done in psychology. So you're kind of like, okay, either all of the studies are wrong, like including current day psychology studies, or a psychic phenomena is real.
You come up against this.
And then you kind of step back and you're like, okay, well, what's the other problem? Oh, okay, it must just be our paradigm, not right. Or, you know, because it's also, you know, I think some might argue, some people do go back and forth on the statistics and on the papers methods, and they keep trying to debunk those. But my argument is, it's not just in the lab, you know, it's not just these studies. There's countless stories. People experience it every single day. We call them extraordinary human experiences, but they're really typical human experiences. So, you know, to some extent, the lab studies just add validation, but, you know, I don't think you can fully discount them, even if you proved that the studies were not, you know, well done.
Yeah. What I see is a lot of people who get into this kind of work, research, have their own experiences and then have to validate it. And it's like, okay, now where do I start? I like when you spoke with one of the people from the Winbridge Institute. They're the ones who studied mediums. And you were saying, mm-hmm. well, there isn't a whole lot done. And he was like,
yeah. Yeah. It's like, let me send you a reading list I've created for people just like you.
oops. Okay. But that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. And I like your response. It's like, okay, fine. This is what I needed. And so, you know, you take the ball and you run with it. And the thing is, with your background, and you've included in the book perspectives from people who are nuts and bolts scientist background, and then also from intuitives. I like the first one that kind of threw you for a loop when she introduced the topic of fairies.
Oh my, yes.
I love that.
Yeah. Oh, I loved it too, actually. I've really, the whole journey has been super fun for me because, like I said, I come from a very skeptical, strict mindset. Encountering all this kind of mystical, magical things along the way that really made me question, you know, and watched my reactions along the way. And then I would try to keep them in check, you know, and just be like, okay, well, just wait. You know, I just kept telling myself to wait, like just wait and just keep collecting and just see and just, you know, and that helped me because then it's like, okay, let me wait till I have a full data set before I just start closing my data set and, you know, coming to a conclusion. Yeah, when she talked about the fairies, I was like, oh, you're crazy. But because that's what society tells us we're supposed to think of someone who says they've seen fairies. But then I was looking at her and I was like, I don't know, I've known this woman a while. She's okay. She seems, I was like, everything else out of her mouth is fine. Mm-hmm. So who am I to say she's seen fairies or not?
Okay,
yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to throw myself in that group. As a child, I had an imaginary friend. The imaginary friend was what we would consider a gnome by the style of dress, the pattern, all of that. My imaginary friend, I told my mom, flew out the window. His name was Hago when I was about 4 and a half, and I never mentioned him again. But those, to me, some of these other things that we discount when we have dreams and visions and other kind of psychic experiences, we're exposed to that. It's whether our culture or society around us determines whether we can talk about it out loud. And so that I love the fact that was the first one you got, because that, boy, they threw you into the deep end of the pool.
I hadn't even come up. Yeah, she was the first one. She just started, you know, and good for her. Like, she didn't, you know, edit. She didn't
know
anything.
No.
But she
I love that.
So I'm glad that she felt comfortable enough to say that to me, because, you know, it shook me, but in a good way.
Well, I think that's a lot of what you bring into the book in the background, going into it with an open mind, objective, which is what science should be. I don't respect as much the term skeptical, because I think that's a bias. That's an automatic, inherent bias that is determined to see a negative. Whereas objective, mm-hmm. you don't know which way. It's like it's wide open. And I think we have to get, in my own experience, away from that autopilot preset of respectable to be a skeptic. I think you miss a lot with that.
I agree, yeah. And I think just from a neuroscience and a psychology perspective, this is also how I came to think of it. I thought, oh, you know, we focus a lot on senses and perception in neuroscience, and a lot of these exceptional experiences we will dismiss as being, oh, you know, you perceived it wrong or you interpreted it wrong. And I think because we have these assumptions of what can be true or not. And I think after this journey, I think what's more interesting to me is why you interpreted what you interpreted as a fairy. Believing that you did, and, you know, us kind of not questioning whether it's true or not, but asking what is the significance of that.
Right.
Because I think there's probably a deeper meaning behind it, and whether it's true or not is kind of irrelevant. So that's how I've come to think of it.
I love that, because that acknowledges that, see, if I've imagined it in my mind, it doesn't matter. It's real. So it's real to me, and then we have to go from there, because that helps you deal with people who are schizophrenic, which I am very familiar with that. And so, not me, but... But that is something that when you don't validate somebody else's experience, you've already lost the game. Mm-hmm. You cannot communicate with them until you say, all right, this is what's happening for you. Let's go from here. How does this work? I like what you're saying in that regard.
Yes. Yeah. And I really, it took me a while to get there, but after it all, I kept thinking, I thought, how invalidating of us to dismiss all of these people's experiences. Like, what a not inclusive society we are. Like, how isolating, and why are we this way? And then really, when I went to dig into the history of, you know, the Western worldview, the worldview in which we find ourselves now, that's when I came up against all this, like, you know, actually, it's just this sliver of these last couple hundred years that we've had this worldview. The rest of the history of humanity and many other cultures in the present day have a very different view, you know, where we are integrated with nature, where there's meaning and symbols and archetypes, you know, in our environments that we can derive meaning from to guide our lives, which is what my family does with the coffee readings. So I think it was a nice reminder to go kind of through that history of worldviews and just understand in this culture, it's crazy to say in fairies that you've seen a fairy. In other cultures, you're crazy if you haven't seen a fairy by age 12, you know?
Yeah, they don't like
it's
you.
It's just a perspective. Right, yeah, exactly, yeah. Oh, why haven't the fairies visited you, you know? Uh-huh. Like, something wrong with you. Yeah.
Okay, well, the other thing that you...
perspective.
I saw an article that you shared to Substack, and this had to do with psychedelics and doing a virtual reality trip with psychedelics to help achieve a transcendent state. I like the fact that you're addressing that. I don't believe it's necessary to have the actual drug enhancement. And so seeing this other element as another gateway to having an experience where you are seeing yourself as light. I had that with meditation, so, and have been out of body. So those things were solved for me without any other enhancement. But for people who are not able to make that that jump, when you're looking at that, do you feel like that is a possibility as a therapeutic tool?
Yeah, the research on that is brand new, but the studies, we're still waiting for more of them to be done to come out. But there was one study that showed that this VR experience your body's not in it, you know, you're kind of like this diffused ball of light, and you can merge with other people in the experience or other balls of light. It can give you that sense of boundarylessness, the oceanic feeling, and, you know, a lot of other factors that make it a transcendent experience. And it does seem to have the same, like at least on the mystical experience questionnaire, and the, you know, your dissolution of your ego or your sense of self. So that experience is just as strong as a I think a medium to high dose of LSD or as psilocybin, which comes from mushrooms. So, which are both psychedelics. So yeah, so it does seem to be powerful. Now psychedelics, can in higher doses, the new studies coming out show that they have been improving depression and anxiety symptoms as well as PTSD. So, you know, whether we can extend the VR to these medical conditions, that we have to wait for the studies for that. And just in terms of transcendent experiences, it seems to be as effective, but we probably need more research.
Mona Sabani, a neuroscientist discovery of the ineffable mysteries of the universe. I asked her if she wanted to be the one to study this in the next break.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Proof of Spiritual Phenomena, a Neuroscientist's Discovery of the Ineffable Mysteries of the Universe by Mona Sabani, Ph.D. Sabani, S-O-B-H-A-N-I, Ph.D. The fun thing about this is her mother does coffee ground readings. Perfect for Wendy's Coffee House. I would love to have a reading, but we're not going to go there. However, if her mom would write a book, I would buy it. A lot of really interesting things that she has studied forced her to redirect and re-examine the direction she was going. Some of the studies that influenced her, Terence McKenna. Terence McKenna influences a lot of people. Well, he made a big impression. Working with brain studies, would it be something that you would be interested in following up on?
I'm not that interested in doing brain imaging research myself anymore, but I'm always reading it and staying up on the field. I am interested in immersive technologies and transcendent self-transcendence. So that is definitely something that I'm looking to be more involved in the future. For me, it just became less interesting to describe what areas of the brain light up for experiences. Like to me, and especially with this experience that I've just gone through and this book I've written, it's even less important to me in some ways. It's almost like all we do with the brain scans is describe what's happening in the brain. And I'm more interested in why things are happening. And, you know, you kind of don't get those answers in neuroimaging.
Well, you touched on that when you asked me that question of what does that mean for you? What does that represent when I use that language or that term? And it sounds very much like the inquisitive part of you is saying, where else can I go with this? What is the most interesting of all the research that you've gone through with the book at this point?
Yeah, so I'm really interested. This is part of the reason. So besides just like, is psychic phenomena real, which is one of the questions that launched me on the journey. The other was I was reading about past life regression literature and how healing that modality was. And on my own self-healing journey, and I write about that in the book a little bit towards the end, I started doing breath work. I tried a past life regression. I tried psychedelics. I did all kinds of things. And I found, and then I started reading the literature too, and I found all these altered states of consciousness are very healing. And if you look at a lot of indigenous cultures, you know, they have medicine men or women, or sometimes called shamans. And that's what they do, is they kind of go into this altered state to heal other people, to, you know, get information to energetically, whatever you want to call it, reset.
Yeah.
And so I found that altered states of consciousness are very, very healing. And I just got interested in that idea, which is why I'm interested in the VR stuff and, you know, for healing purposes. So that I'm still digging into, like, why that is the case. And I don't, you know, there is work to be done there. I think it's interesting. But I think, you know, in a society where we're plagued with a lot of mental health issues and not a lot of solutions, I think it's a promising avenue. Yeah.
You're touching on new areas for our science to get to delve into, and then bringing that psychedelic aspect into it takes it to a whole different level.
Yeah. And I think it's all happening at once. Like this resurgence of research in psychedelics has just happened in the last decade, really the last few years. So, you know, it hasn't been, it's kind of been abandoned because of all the regulation from the government. But I think that they pose a really interesting intersection in particular, just because it's tying together, you know, the mystical and the spiritual with the medical and with self-transcendence. So it's a pretty interesting area.
Okay, so here's the materialist, that's you. And now you have become more aware in terms of having a greater awareness in, you know, besides the body. What did you experience when you decided to, you know, step out of that role and explore your own consciousness? What was the big, like maybe the carrot, the nugget that says, I want to keep going with this?
Oh, yeah. Well, honestly, man, I don't even know. Which experience would you like to hear about? They all taught me different things. I would say, so I did a past life regression, and I don't even care or know if they're, you know, if the stories that you're telling are real or past lives or whatnot, but I'll tell you that at the end of the session, I was like crying, not just crying, like I was weeping from like the depths of my stomach in a way that I've only cried like that maybe twice in my life, you know, when I've received really emotional bad news. So I could not believe the amount of emotion that was coming out of me after, you know, reliving this really could have been a fantasy. I don't know what it was. You know, I told this story. And so, I mean, that's, you know, what they call in psychotherapy, that's catharsis.
Yeah.
It's emotional catharsis, and that's very healing. So it's kind of like, I don't even know or care about whether, you know, the story is true or not, but that was extremely healing. And then with psychedelics, you come to experience a whole new way of being, of just being. And it's hard. These experiences are ineffable. They're hard to put into words, and hard to describe. But you like come out of the experience with a new way of just living in the world. I don't know how else to explain it, but like you have new eyes, you have new ways of like interacting with your environment, new perspectives, new shifts. So you have shifts in the way that you think about things and with your emotions. Cause like on psychedelics, you can feel like the entire range of human emotions within like a minute. Mm-hmm. So you suddenly have this amazing appreciation of, wow, like I'm such an amazing being. I have all these different emotions. You know, I can feel so much love and so much interconnectedness. And you come out of the experience just like, wow, there's so many more ways to be alive, you know, and you don't. So I think it brings an awareness to your everyday consciousness, to your everyday moment to moment living, because you've experienced a new way of living. That makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. You mentioned some of the people that you were influenced by. John Alexander is one. Were there certain people that gave you a little bit more, maybe a sense of, I need to explore here or ask more questions about this? Were there any people who were very influential?
Oh, man. Everybody contributed to some way. I mean, it was really like following breadcrumbs. Like it started with psychic phenomena, and then suddenly I was reading about past life regression, and then suddenly I was reading about reincarnation, and suddenly, and it just was like, oh my goodness, yes. And then at some point, so psychedelics, actually someone had recommended it to me. They're like, you should look into psychedelics because paranormal stuff can happen when people take psychedelics. And that was actually the reason I looked at that initially. And it was true. There's all these accounts of like telepathy and precognitive visions that come true. All these transpersonal events. So everything was just, every person I spoke to would point me in a new direction. And yeah, I'm not even done. I just keep buying books and they're in a huge pile and I haven't made my way through that because it's never ending. Uh-huh. And there's always something more to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my book pile is just like that. It just seems just like, I won't call it a cancer, but it has that exponential growth. It continues to, there's so much to learn and there's so many different ways to go with it. I want to know, are you ever going to get a horse?
Oh, I would love to. Did I put that in the book? But I always have this like fantasy when I was younger. People would ask, like, you know, when you grow up, blah, blah, and I would say, I'm going to have a ranch in Malibu with horses. That's what I used to say. I don't really want that anymore, but that used to be the running, you know, joke. Like everyone knew in my family when I was a kid, that's what I wanted. And then, so that was weird. Yeah. When I got that when I was interviewing, Rachel, the intuitive, and she said that out of the blue, like, oh, you had a past life or you had a animal that passed away that you never got over. And it was a horse. I mean, chills head to toe. I just couldn't believe it.
And then you went home and there's a little stuffed horse on the bed and remembering that, well, and the thing was, you said you don't have a connection to pets. And so that was prompted it. And then, that was the horse thing that did that. The other thing, was it Bob the ghost?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, my friend Bob, my roommate.
Uh-huh, yeah. And you never saw Bob.
No, I've never seen Bob. I've never seen him myself. But my friend, she's sensitive, she claims. She doesn't see him anymore. But, he used to be a regular.
Bob has moved on now. Apparently, you weren't exciting enough.
Yeah, I had another friend who, had told me to, like, I don't know, burn some sage or I don't know. We did something, and then Bob never came back. So
Bob. Well, sometimes they just need permission. You know, it's like, I see you. You don't have to be here, and you can go forward. And they're like, oh, really? Okay, I didn't know there was a door out of this place. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, he moved on, hopefully to somewhere better and more exciting.
The stories that you bring through, especially with Brian Weiss and the past life information, talking about how when they identified something from a past life that was a current life block or challenge or issue or illness, and addressing that from a past life perspective, it went away. Do you feel comfortable with that, with your own experience?
Yeah, I didn't have anything dramatic like that from the past life regressions that I've had, but that issue is what made me interested in the research. And the stories of, you know, all the literature I read, they're incredible. They're incredible stories of these, phobias. You have no idea where they come from, these kind of strange interpersonal, like you said, blocks. And then you have a session and it clears up. And I actually Stan Grof's work has a lot of that as well.
Yeah.
He started with psychedelics, but went into breath work. And so he has a lot of interesting stories too. So I love those. I didn't have anything dramatic myself, but maybe one day.
Well, right place, right time. The science about this too, I think from the beginning, we didn't understand how we are connected to the science. And so when you're doing a test, you're not really able to be separate and distance and as objective, because you're going to in some way inform or influence the event. Have you noticed that?
With science in particular?
With science, overall in your own stuff. I mean, to me, you've transformed. And it's interesting, you're a cognitive neuroscientist. And all of a sudden, you switch from just wanting to know what the brain looked like and the tissue and all of that and going into, I want to experience it. And that's a huge... Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. No, I've changed a lot. a lot. I was very, I kind of think of it like I was more 2D and now I'm more 3D. but yeah, because it is all these experiences. Like I said, the past life regression brought a whole new dimension to emotions. You know, the psychedelics, the breath work brought a whole new dimensions of emotion, but also awareness. So all of the psychic readings also, honestly, to just continue to amaze me as things that they are able to perceive, and also how they each pick up similar things about you, which is one of the things I was interested in comparing, was do they all see different things? Do they see similar things? Is there a way that you could ever, measure it, that type of, it's definitely changed the way I think about a lot of things. And I used to only want to, I wanted to get to the root of it. Everything, like, what's the reductionist approach? What's the root of this? And I think I view things a little more holistically now. And, like we talked about at the beginning with the symbolism from the coffee, I'm much more comfortable now with that and with accepting it and understanding that things are symbolic and archetypal in the universe. You know, I don't think it makes sense always to reduce everything into parts. So I've definitely changed the way I think and approach problems for sure.
I like your writing, and I'm talking about the stuff you posted on Substack. Are you going to keep up with that?
Yeah. I inherited that newsletter from a journalist who was writing about the psychedelic renaissance, and I'm pretty passionate about it, so I think I'll keep that up for a while, as long as it's interesting to me and to others.
Have you done some studying about with Terrence McKenna and Dennis McKenna, and have you gone into that direction with it, or where are you?
Oh my goodness. I love Terrence McKenna's work. I actually volunteered for Dennis McKenna. He has a whole new academy now, and I was volunteering for their conference because I just love everything that they're doing and they're interested in. So yeah, I'm super interested in ethnobotany now, which I never was before. But everything about their writings, especially Terrence, what's his book? The one, Food of the Gods? Food of the Gods? I think that's the book. That one is excellent.
The plants and having that different relationship. I mean, those are very mind expanding. And once you get into that, yeah, it's like a drug. It is a drug, right? Uh-huh. Okay.
It is a drug, yeah. And I think they're very healing. I mean, I think Terrence McKenna's book, Food of the Gods, changed a lot of things for me. That was actually him and Richard Tarnas's work were very instrumental in helping me understand that, as I mentioned, that worldview versus other worldviews type of thing. Because when you're in the worldview and you aren't aware there are other ways of looking at the world, I think you come up into crisis. And that's where I found myself in the beginning was I have a paradigm. My experiences don't fit into my paradigm. I'm in crisis. That's where I was. And you have to, you know, read or branch out, or you're not even aware there could be other ways of thinking about the world and reality. And once you discover those, you slip out of crisis because you're just like, oh, I see. There's another way of understanding things. It's pretty simple. And I think Terrence McKenna's book and Richard Tarnas's work really helped me with that kind of just understanding. There are other ways, other cultures, you know, who see us as part of nature, who understand the signs and symbols. So it all made sense.
And it's been going on for centuries with the indigenous cultures who have their own unique versions of reality and dealing with reality and aspects that they just assume, you know, everybody else could really figure out very quickly. And then Western science says, it doesn't exist.
Very dismissive, very arrogant.
Yeah. So we're getting over that. Okay. So it's nice to see there is a transition with all of these other elements, which when someone has a paradigm shift in terms of maybe a near-death experience or a spontaneous illness that is all of a sudden healed, then that changes your worldview. I like this Mark Plotkin. It's one of the quotes that you include.
Yeah.
Anybody who's had experience with these altered realities knows there are other realities.
Yes. Mark Plotkin is an ethnobotanist, and he has a fantastic podcast called Plants of the Gods, which I highly recommend. So fascinating. But yeah, he talks about all the different plants, all their medicinal and other uses throughout humanity's history. And I think that kind of relationship, that's why I like the plants. I like the psychedelics because it's just one way to view how your cultural context kind of imprisons you,
yeah.
And kind of keeps your view limited. Because like just listening to a podcast like his, you're like, wow, in my mind, I drink wine on Fridays, or I try to limit it, or this is my view of wine. And then you listen to his podcast on episode on wine, and you're like, whoa, wine was used, you know, as an antibiotic. Like they used to drink it more than water because it was cleaner than water back in the day. You know what I mean? So it's like you hear all these stories and you're like, oh, wow, it's just your cultural context really frames the way you see everything. And if you can break out of that, you know, it could be helpful.
Okay. And see, that's what you're doing. That's what you have done. You're walking your talk is how it would be phrased. You're doing exactly what you are saying needs to be done.
Yeah. Well, I was forced to, but yes, but I'm definitely happier on this side, on the other side of it. So I guess it was worth it.
Yeah, I listened to you. I guess it was worth it. Yeah. Okay. I'm looking forward to see what you come up with the big pile of books, okay? Because you are just getting started. You're just getting started. And I'm going to subscribe to your Substack. I'm like, if you're going to keep that up, I would really like to stay up to date with what you're perusing, because I do think this is how we learn and we grow and we expand, by exploring and sometimes just test driving a different frame of reality to see, well, can I adapt this for my own personal use? And that's how we evolve.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. Yeah, that's my personal mantra now is stay radically curious, because, you know, we don't know. I just know that I don't know everything now, which I didn't know before. So now I just want to keep learning.
How do your parents accept that now that the coffee grounds are like, okay, Mom, you're good?
We're always trying to figure it out, actually. We're always testing it. So, you know, like, it's just one of those things. These things are kind of mysterious. Like, I don't think we'll ever fully understand. So even for us, we're always doing it and taking notes and seeing how it turned out and whatnot. But, yeah, she always questions her. She doesn't see it as a, she sees it as a skill set. As a technical skill set. She doesn't see it as a talent, I would say.
Okay. Okay. I think that's worth a book. Even if it's little, if it's a tiny book, it's worth a book, because that is.
I know. We should do that.
Okay. So tell Mom to prepare herself.
Okay. I will tell her it has been requested. Uh-huh. So we've got to deliver.
Yes. Yeah. Even if she wants to do, like, you know, 130 pages. Okay. That's a book. And she can put descriptions and diagrams and your own personal testimonial and your friends, because they're all there lined up. And
that's true.
It's good to go. All right. So, but the thing is, it gives people an idea of another way to connect with their own personal insight. And it is a tool. So there you go. All right. Hey, you, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate your time and I love what you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
The book is Proof of Spiritual Phenomena, A Neuroscientist's Discovery of the Ineffable Mysteries of the Universe. Okay, and she's just getting started. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mona Sabani, PhD.com. Check out the website and her writing on Substack. I'll post links in the description for the show. Wendy's Coffeehouse. Thanks for listening.